The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of The Undercurrent. I'm your host, Tara Sloan, and yes, 2 weeks in a row, can you believe it? As I mentioned last week, to round out the season, we're going to introduce you to some folks inside the Sharks organization. Last week, it was the supervisor of European scouting, Shin Larson, who is a very busy man at the moment. This week, Sharks prospect with a great story, Tristan Robbins. He was drafted 56th overall by the San Jose Sharks in 2020. Tristan's dad, Trevor, was signed by the Sharks, and in 92, he was Archers Herbe's backup. Now, it was a great full circle moment when Tristan posted a photo of himself wearing his dad's vintage Sharks windbreaker after he was drafted. Now, after lighting it up his last couple of seasons in junior, Tristan played this last year with the Barracuda, then had the chance to make his NHL debut at the end of the season with the Sharks. It was in Winnipeg this happened, essentially his hometown. Dozens of family and friends were in attendance, watching in the stands, cheering him on. It was a great moment. The future is truly bright for Tristan. Here's our chat. Tristan joins me now. It's our second attempt of the day, and it was actually really sweet. So tell everybody, you were outside in your car because why?
I was in my car because my girlfriend is studying to write her a big medical exam here shortly, so I didn't want to distract her and get in her way.
Which is really sweet and kind of you. Unfortunately, the audio wasn't any good. So here we are meeting once again. And where are you? Where do you spend your summers?
I'm in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan in Canada. That's where I spend my summers.
Which is, by the way, a really beautiful city, particularly in the summer, I would add. So Tristan, you know, we are a little under 2 months from you having made your NHL debut. And I'm wondering, does it all feel like a bit of a blur? Have you had a chance to really mull it over? What are your takeaways at this point now that you're maybe a little bit removed from it?
Yeah, it all happened so fast. I think just being able to make my debut in Winnipeg with all my family and friends there was so amazing. Everyone who has supported me growing up and just, you know, having them there was so special for me. But yeah, no, it for sure is a bit of a blur now. It all happened so fast. But I was really grateful for that opportunity. And it just gets me really excited for next season.
So, I mean, it's an understatement to say you had family and friends there. There were over 40 family and friends, and most of them were wearing various jerseys from across the span of your career. Did you know that it was going to be such a huge cohort of people there for you?
I knew I had mostly just my immediate family and some close friends that were coming, but the word spread really quick, and my invited friends and my friends of friends came, and it was really amazing just to see, you know, everyone kind of show up and come and support me, and just, you know, that energy was just awesome. But I for sure wasn't expecting that many people.
You grew up what, about 3 hours from Winnipeg in Cold Lake?
Yeah.
Okay, tell us a little bit about Cold Lake for anybody who hasn't maybe traveled the expanse of Manitoba, which, by the way, I have, but most people haven't. So what is Cold Lake like?
It's an hour north of Brandon, which is about 3 hours away from Winnipeg. It's in a national park, so it's quite a large tourist spot in the summers. It has a very beautiful lake. It's actually quite cool, so it's very, very refreshing in the summer. But it's a great spot to go on vacation if you have time on the weekends, or, you know, in my case, just to live there, which is pretty amazing. Lots of biking, fishing, boating, just typical lake activities.
If anybody, though, looks at your HockeyDB, they'll see that you were actually born in the UK, and there's a reason for that. Your dad played hockey for a lot of years, so that's where he was playing during his pro career. So at what age did you move back to Canada?
Yeah, I was quite young. I think it was back and forth for a few seasons, just following the end of my dad's career, just back at the lake in the summers. And then we were full time back in Canada when I don't even know how old I was, but I was still very young. And then my dad retired and hockey kind of started for me. It was kind of my turn.
So how old were you when you actually got up on skates and a stick in your hand?
Oh, I think it was like one of those typical hockey parents. Like as soon as I could walk, I was put on skates. But I really enjoyed it originally. I that's what my parents, I remember my parents telling me that, but it, I think full time and jumping into the full swing of things, I think I was about 6 or 7 years old when it started kind of getting a little more intense.
What, and your dad coached you for a period of time too?
Yeah, up until I was 15, my dad had coached me. So I guess yeah, like the first 7 or 8 years of my hockey career when I was young, and then right before I kind of moved on to junior.
You hear kind of mixed reviews sometimes from players whose parents play and coach. What was your dad like as a coach? And was there a separation from like Trevor, your dad, and then Trevor, your coach?
I think there was a bit of everything. There's a, you know, a lot of good, a lot of bad, some ugly, but yeah, it was interesting. I respect him a lot as a coach and as a hockey figure, because he is so knowledgeable. And I really do think he knows the game really well. And he was a very good coach. But yeah, there was, you know, sometimes where it was like, I remember that's my dad. So then I get frustrated. And then, you know, he's just talking to his son. So then he gets frustrated because I'm probably maybe not listening. But yeah, it was pretty cool to have that relationship with him and to have him coach me growing up and, you know, teach me a lot of what I know today.
It's interesting though, that he's a goaltender, right? So there's also like a different perspective that he has on the game in general. What does he add from that angle for you?
I think like the goaltenders kind of see how everything develops in front of them. So they see the whole game and a lot more than the players on the ice who are, you know, maybe not facing the play. So, and I think he's got the mind for it as well. He's very detailed and really, he's really into that kind of the detailed work. So I think that's why he did so well as a coach, and him and I kind of, you know, worked together quite well, is just, you know, how articulate he was.
Yeah, some would say goaltenders are interesting people.
I didn't want to say it, but
quirky maybe. And I mean, tell you, it's never, you know, people who come from families, it's usually the whole family pitches in. So what did your mom kind of give you as you were coming up in that hockey world?
Mom was definitely the safe spot for sure. Mm-hmm. If dad was a little too intense or whatever, mom would always mediate. So it was really nice to have her. And she was just, you know, so supportive growing up. She did everything that I needed, that, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff, the cooking, you know, the driving if my dad couldn't make it, just, you know, everything. So I think having her to even, you know, talk to and bounce ideas off of, and all the support and love that she gave me growing up was just awesome. But I mean, you know, any typical mom with their kid, but it was, yeah, it was great.
So, okay, I should have asked you this actually before we went with live with this interview, because I was trying to cross-reference a bunch of, like, I was Googling your mom. Her Twitter account is entirely devoted to you, so it's hard to tell anything about her life, which makes total sense. Is your mom a yoga teacher?
She is, yes.
Okay, so I wonder then, you know, that's a really interesting perspective in terms of how she would approach body work and breathing. Did you do yoga growing up? Do you do yoga now? Is any of her kind of belief system incorporated into you?
Absolutely. I really hated yoga when I was younger, partly because I wasn't very flexible. So it was just angry. It just wasn't fun for me. And my dad was the exact same. Didn't really like the movement. So I think having her continue to push us through that both made myself and my dad better and more flexible. And I continue to do a lot of stuff that she's, you know, shown me and helped me with. And I really do think it's a great way to, like, not only stay in shape, but to stay mobile and to even get stronger in areas where, you know, you're maybe not used to moving in.
I totally agree. What about, what's your philosophy on recovery? Because, you know, there's training, but there's also recovery is instrumental in you know, how you get back up.
Yeah, I think recovery is just as important as anything else. If you put your body through, you know, immense work, then you have to give it optimum time to recover, or else you won't make the gains that you want. So I think, you know, as hard as you work, you still have to take care of yourself and listen to your body. And I think my mom's actually really helped me get in tune with my body a little bit more and, you know, figure out. But I think, yeah, the recovery part is huge, and not only just like resting, but, you know, stretching and doing mobility and just the lighter load stuff that I think is very important.
Do you think that your generation is a little more willing? Like, I'm sure if I talk to, you know, a player 20 years your senior, maybe they wouldn't be quite as open to some of the things that the trainers are suggesting now. Things like yoga, things like Pilates, things like even ballet for some players, things like those isolation chamber things. Do you find that your age group is a little more open to non-conventional methods?
I think so. I do think that a lot of us were brought up in a lot of different situations and surroundings. Like, some of us like had the yoga background, and like you said, like the ballet background. And so I think we're quite open-minded with training, and that things are trending now. Like, a lot of the off-ice trainers are implementing some, you know, some really unique and different movements, and, you know, we're all for it in any, you know, any way to get stronger and to get better. I think everyone's been quite open-minded that I talk to, at least.
And what about your summer program? What does it look like?
I mean, right now I've taken a bit of time off the ice, just, you know, getting away from the rink a little bit, but in a few weeks I'll start gearing up again, start getting back on the ice. But I've been in the gym, you know, mostly just trying to get stronger right now, get a little bit of size. And then as my summer progresses, I get more and more into athletic and more explosive exercises and workouts as my summer progresses, preparing myself for camp.
How does that work? Do your coaches and trainers with the Barracuda and even with the Sharks, do they sort of say, hey, I think this is an area you can improve upon and like to see this when you come back to camp next year?
Yeah, absolutely. We have meetings at the start and at the end of every year, and that's kind of how it breaks down, is your weaknesses, your strengths, and then also our strength staff gives you a program, which you could follow or not. It's totally up to you. So there'll be things in that program that I implement into my training with my trainers here as well. And I, like I said before, I love keeping an open mind with all the exercises, and maybe there's some things that I like more than others that I can switch or add or tweak a little bit. So yeah, they do a really good job at you know, making sure that we're in the best possible shape.
It's Rachel Lannis, right? Organization. She's so interesting. Like, she's, you know, she's won all these championships as a player. I know she has a really holistic approach as a trainer, as a fitness instructor, a coach. What would you say her best qualities are?
I think just how upfront she is. Like, she's not going to beat around the bush. She's going to tell you exactly what she wants from you. She's going to, you know, show you exactly what she wants from you. She's going to pretty much grab you by the hand and take you through the movements and make sure you're doing it right. And then just, you know, she's very, very supportive in that aspect too. And she really enjoys what she does, and she's really good at it too. So I think those both go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Who did you want to be when you grew up? Who did you watch when you were a kid?
I was one of those Sidney Crosby kids for sure.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I really loved watching him growing up. I just thought, you know, everything that he did was amazing. I wanted to be a Sidney Crosby when I was older. But yeah, I was a huge fan.
Hmm. And at what point did you kind of identify this path for yourself? I guess when did you maybe realize that, oh, I think I might be good?
I think probably my second or third year of junior hockey. I had a tough first couple of years. I was kind of on the lower end of the lines. Like, I was on the bottom lines, so I didn't really get a whole lot of ice time, and I didn't really, you know, fully know what I was capable of. But as I got older and progressed a little bit, I got a lot more opportunity, and I trained really hard in the summers, because this is always what I had wanted, but I just wasn't sure if it kind of wanted me back.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think probably my second or third year junior is when things started getting a lot better and a lot easier for me as well.
A lot of people say that playing in the WHL, which you did with the Saskatoon Blades, is like pretty much the best training you could have because players in the dub have to do so much more travel, kind of build your stamina really differently than in the OHL and the QMJHL. Do you think that's true?
I mean, as a WHL guy, I'll tell you that is true, but there it's like an ongoing argument that, you know, the Canadian guys have kind of going on between the dub guys, the O guys, and the Q guys. But if you do look at the where the teams are located and the travel that some teams have to go through, it is quite crazy. And the schedule is really hard, and we play a lot of games, and it's over a short period of time. So I mean, I don't disagree with anything you just said.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Western Canadians love to think that that just makes Western Canadian kids from, you know, from tough stock. So tell me about getting drafted. Did you have a sense, like when you were, you know, talked to San Jose, did you have a sense that that's where you were going to go?
I had an idea. I had some meetings with, the old general manager now, Mr. Wilson. We talked over the phone a few times, and things seemed great, but I really had no clue. It was actually quite a surprise on draft day. It was one of those things where I think I could have went with anywhere between like a 30 pick range. So each pick, I was on the edge of my seat, just like, just so much anticipation. And I had my whole family there. Pretty much everyone who came to that game in Winnipeg was in my house that day as well. It was a great experience there as well. And then when San Jose picked me and my name was called, it was just amazing.
I mean, was your dad elated?
Yeah, my dad was quite surprised. He honestly really couldn't believe it. And there's more to that story too, is that he played for the Blades as well.
Mm-hmm.
Same junior team. And which was kind of crazy because my first full year playing junior was with the Blades. And then, you know, I go on to get drafted by the Sharks, which was his first pro team he was with. And things just seemed a little like, it was like, well, there's too many coincidences going on right now. So it was a really cool experience, just almost following in his footsteps.
So I'll try to post this kind of below where we post this podcast, but you know, it's now kind of a famous photo of you in your dad's old San Jose jacket. Did you know that was kicking around?
I did actually. I had worn it a few times that year just because I liked it. I liked the retro look and feel of it. And then a few minutes after, I got off the phone with the organization, I went and put it on, and I just thought that was, you know, it was perfect timing. And my dad loved it as well, because I think he'd forgotten about it. And it just worked out so perfect.
So when you made the jump, you played a couple of games in the AHL back to the Blades, and then you know, full time this past season. What can you say about the jump from, you know, from major junior to the AHL, and what was the biggest learning curve for you?
I think like things happen a lot faster. The zones are a lot tighter. You don't have as much time and space. So I think the biggest transition is like your head. You have to be able to think the game a lot quicker. You're not going to have nearly as much time as you would in junior to get your head up and make a play. You kind of have to have a rough idea of what you're going to do with the puck or without the puck before you get it in those situations. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is the speed. And then obviously, you know, you're playing against men compared to teenage boys. So that's a big difference as well.
What do you think about San Jose as a hockey market? I mean, it's, you know, I find it really interesting. This is my first season here, and the fan base is rabid. They love the Sharks. They love the Barracuda. But it's not the same as Canada, where everybody eats, sleeps, and breathes hockey. What do you think about it?
I think that like the Canadian hockey fan base is a lot different because everyone's kind of in tune with it, I'd say. But the ones in the States, I'd say, are more of a loyal fan base where it's not as many, but each person who is a fan has been a fan and will stay a fan. And I like that because there's, you know, like I said, there's a lot of loyalty to it. And then you get the support through the loyalty, and then seeing the same faces, it's almost like kind of relieving to keep seeing the same faces come back and back. And it's just cool to get that support.
I have to think, I mean, I know what it's like in Saskatoon in the winter. So I have to think, even though we did not have the all-time best winter here in the Bay Area, I have to think it's, you know, feels a little better walking out of the rink and it's not minus 1,000.
Sometimes you get out of the shower after the practice, you go to your car, and by that time your hair is frozen again. Just, yeah, it gets pretty cold here in the winters.
It does indeed. You know, part of our broadcast conversation sort of throughout the whole maybe back half of the year after the All-Star break was like, who's going to be brought up from the Barracuda? When's it going to happen? I mean, talking obviously about, you know, your Bortolos and your Eklunds, but so much speculation about who would come up and how and when. Did you like, are you kind of waiting with bated breath? Like, when's it going to happen for me? Or did you have a sense at a certain point that you were ready and that was going to happen for you?
I think both. The second half, I had a great break and I was so ready mentally to come back and have a strong second half and, you know, be a leader on the team and just show what I can do. And I felt that I really did that and I felt like I really earned a look. But yeah, at the same time, it was just like I knew I was ready for it and I was excited. And when I got that opportunity, it was just, you know, a bit of relief as well, but then made me just as hungry for next season.
Do you get nervous? I mean, what kind of butterflies? I mean, you had an NHL debut in front of your friends and family in basically, you know, a hometown market. So there's a lot of variables there.
Yeah, I think when I get nervous, it's not so much like timid nervous. It's just like nervous excitement where it's just like, I want to go and do it. I want to go and play. And it's just so much excitement. That's probably that's my nervous would just be a lot of excitement.
I would think so. What were your biggest takeaways from playing up?
I think that's just, you know, another step with the time and space and with your head game, just, you know, being able to do things quicker and think quicker and be in the right spots too. Because if you're not in the right spot, then, you know, you're probably going to get scored on. So I think that, yeah, just that. And then also, if you could play the game quicker, if you can move quicker, then ultimately it'll be a lot easier for yourself as well.
Who do you admire in the organization, both with the Barracuda and with the Sharks?
I actually really admire William Eklund, his work ethic. And, you know, him and I are pretty good buddies as well. But just going to the rink with him and seeing how he carries himself and what he does, he really is a true professional. And I think he really deserved, you know, what he got at the end of the year. I mean, too bad for his injury, but he's doing well. But yeah, I think he's someone that's going to be very exciting in the future.
I think so too. Well, listen, this was fantastic. I loved talking to you and I hope we can do it lots more on some Sharks broadcasts. I'll be rooting for you. I wish you all the best.
I really appreciate your time.
I want to thank Tristan for his time, for taking the time twice in one day. As you heard in that interview, we tried from his car, but it didn't work. So we had to record later in the day. I hope his girlfriend did great on her medical exam. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Undercurrent. In the meantime, you know what I'm going to say, right? Keep your fins above water, everybody. Talk to you soon.